This is Songwriter's Room, and I'm your host, Tomoko. Today's guest is the Netsky twins. The Netsky twins, Steve Netsky and Ron Netsky, are accomplished, versatile songwriters. They've been writing together since 1970s. Many of their songs have been recorded and performed in a variety of occasions. Just to name a few, some of the songs they wrote are Love Don't Hurt People, recorded by Sissy Houston, with Whitney Houston on background vocals, Only Love Can Make It Right, recorded by Jet Brown. Steve Netsky wrote the Celtic instrumental, the Green Hills, and the country blues instrumental, the Patchwork Quilt, for albums by storyteller Sharon Kennedy, and was nominated for a Grammy for the production of her album, The Patchwork Quilt and Other Stories from Around the World in 1998. He also co-wrote the song Standing in the Doorway with legendary folk singer Mary McCaslin on her 26th album, Better Late Than Ever. Steve has enjoyed a career in many aspects of the music business, such as performed solo as a singer-songwriter, toured the world as a member of Klezmer Conservatory Band, as a production manager at Rounder Records, and currently at Ed Keen Associates, a management and booking company where he works with artists like Take Six, The Manhattan Transfer, Nina Freeland, and so on. He has taught music business at University of Massachusetts Lowell, and currently the coach of the songwriting ensemble at New England Conservatory of Music in Boston. Ron Netsky is one of the writers about music for the New York magazine My City Paper. He is also a professor of art at Nazareth College in Rochester, New York. If you are an artist looking for songs to record, please check their YouTube channel, Songs by the Netsky Twins, where you can hear many of their unrecorded songs. Many of these demos were made using the talents of great singers like Chet Brown, Carol Goren, and Michael Bacon from the Bacon Brothers, who's Kevin Bacon's brother, and fantastic musicians like Rich Rudin, George Wallace, and Michael Bacon. You will find many great songs there. If you find any song you'd like to record, contact me through my website, tomokomusic.com. So can I get a whoop whoop? So ladies and gents, please welcome the Netsky Twins!
You must have been behind the door when they were handing out emotions. You can't imagine what they're for. You got a lot of funny notions, but no love in your heart. There's no tears in your eyes. As the words leave your lips, they become little knives that cut so deep. And the only consolation comes from knowing I can cry myself to sleep. Yes, I guess I'll think twice before I let myself fall in love again.
Ooh, beautiful. Thank you so much for that. So that song is available for any artist to record if they want to buy it, use it.
And they would be crazy not to.
Yes.
So that's Handing Out Emotions by Ron.
Such a beautiful, relaxing voice and tone you have.
Thank you, Tomoko. Is that the Pacific Ocean behind you?
Yes, I'm in Bahama, feel like, with my green screen.
Oh, okay. I was fooled by it. I was thinking, wow, you know, my background isn't bad. Ron's background is very tasteful, but wow, the ocean. I could watch the ocean all day.
Right, me too. But I love your background with piano and some books. And which one are you, Steve?
I am Steve, and I have that background for credibility, the bookcase, the piano. And this is Ron in front of some plates and
Hi,
silverware.
Ron. Hi.
Okay, so you are really twins.
We are, and
We've been
we
told.
generally look a lot more alike, but during this pandemic, Ron's wife has been cutting his hair, and no one has been cutting my hair.
I'm usually the long-haired kind of hippie twin, and he's usually the straight sort of business guy, you know. But
Okay.
he's turned into the hippie. I mean, he's so, look at him, you know.
Okay, Ron, can you take off glasses for 1 second? So
Sure.
wow, you guys do look like.
And I did bring my glasses in order to look more like Ron, so later
Okay.
on we'll be able to
Okay.
do that.
Well, nice to meet you guys. I'm glad that three of us can talk like this and meeting for the first time.
It's
It's
great to
great to
meet
meet
you.
you.
Thank you. So, Ron, you are in New York, Rochester?
Yes, I'm in Rochester. I teach at Nazareth College up here. But we both, and Stephen's in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We generally get together a couple of times a year, but this year we haven't because of the pandemic and travel. But we
Right.
both grew up in Philadelphia, which was really a music-rich city and a great place to grow up.
How did you guys start writing together?
Well, we should mention that there is a third Netsky brother, and he's an amazing musician.
Oh.
That's Hankus Netsky, who helped out on a lot of the demos, playing oboe, playing saxophone. He also plays piano and many other instruments, and he actually is the leader of the Klezmer Conservatory band. So he is, we're all very close as brothers. He also writes, but he's more of a composer and arranger than a songwriter, but he's just an astoundingly great musician, and we've done a lot of playing together over the years and some writing together. But anyway, we grew up in a musical family. My grandfather had a wedding band in Philadelphia way back before we were born. My mom and dad went around the house singing, so we got to know a lot of show tunes by the time we were 4 or 5 years old. My mom's brother wrote a Broadway show, wrote that was fairly successful. It's called Happy Hunting, and it starred Ethel Merman and Fernando Lamaze.
People out there might know some of the songs like Mutual Admiration Society. Anyway, we grew up with Harold Carr was our uncle's name, and we really admired him as a composer, songwriter, and I think that probably had something to do with first Stephen going into songwriting and then me going into songwriting.
And his real name actually was Harold Katz, but when he joined a society band in Philadelphia, he made it less Jewish and called himself Harold Carr. But anyway, we had many role models growing up, and as Ron said, Philly was an amazing place because so much great music came from Philly. We were always aware of institutions like the Philadelphia Orchestra, but also in the late 60s and early 70s, the Philly sound became very prominent in the music business.
Yes.
And there were artists right there from Philly, like Teddy Pendergrass, who was the lead singer of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes.
Yes, Philly soul.
Right, the Stylistics, the OJs. Then there were the Spinners, who were from Detroit, but did a lot of their best records in Philly with Tom Bell. And then there were the writers. Gamble and Huff, who were the owners of Philly International, were also amazing writers. Tom Bell and Linda Creed were amazing writers, and they had other songwriting teams like Hawes Simmons and Jefferson and Carstorphine, McFadden and Whitehead. I'm reeling off these names just to show you how much of an impression they made on us. We loved the song so much we got to know exactly who wrote the songs. But what we did, and what we found to be more of an open market was, since I was in Philadelphia, Ron was in Rochester even in the late 70s, but in the late 70s, I began making trips from Philly to New York. It's only a 2-hour trip, a drive or on the train, and it was
Yes.
really exciting to do that. And Ron came a few times when he could do it. But of course, growing up in Philly, you feel like you're in the background because New York is where the action is. Although We love Philly. So it was always a thrill to ride up to New York. And back then, in the late 70s, early 80s, you could actually get appointments with publishing companies to play
That's
music
right.
songs for them. And that was actually how we got through to Sissy Houston and her producer and her management. What happened was, I had been in Nashville visiting Michael Bacon, who lived there at the time. In Philly, Michael Bacon, Kevin Bacon, they were part of this musical crowd. People think of Kevin as a great actor. I think of him as a musician because he played percussion in a group that I was in. And he played percussion with everybody. He would just jam with all the bands. So I always thought of Kevin as a musician.
And a dancer, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Although I didn't really see him do much of that back in Philly, but yeah, he sure had that. So I was down in Nashville visiting Michael. We made a few demos together. And then as I was leaving, he handed me a piece of paper with three names, the name of a record company, private stock, the name of a management and production company called Love Zager, and the name of a publishing company called Rocket Music. I made appointments with all three of them when I got back to Philly. And one of the songs I had recently written was a song called Love Don't Hurt People. Now, where did I get that idea? At the time, my day job was making deliveries for my father's small Philly business, an upholstery mm-hmm. supply company. Mm-hmm. And I would drive around the city, and it's an amazing city, and I would listen to the radio. And at the time, there was this really dumb slogan that the National Rifle Association had, and the slogan went, guns don't kill people, keep people kill people. Well, I thought, well, yeah, but there's too many guns out there. But anyway, I did think to myself, but maybe that would work with love. Love don't hurt people, people hurt people.
Mm.
And I wrote it down in a little book where I wrote titles, and Ron can pick it up from there.
Well, I always went through that book because he had more ideas for songs than I did. So I saw that title, you know, maybe it was the 20th title in a list of titles. And I thought, this is a good idea. So I actually left his room upstairs. We were in Philadelphia in the same house. I went downstairs and it's the only song I ever did this with. I usually write on guitar, but I went down to the piano and I kind of plunked out the chorus, love don't hurt people, people hurt people, you know. And I thought, that's pretty good. That kind of works. And so I wrote some verses, just the words to the verses. And I went back upstairs and I said, here's the chorus. And I sang it to him. He liked it. And I said, now you write the music here's some words. You write the music for the verses. So he did.
So it came together fairly quickly. And it happened that our friend Chet, who later became known as Jet Brown, but is really Chet Brown, an amazing singer who's still singing in Philly. He just has a beautiful voice, no matter what kind of music he sings.
I like the disco song that you did with him.
He did Only Love Can Make It Right. But we saw him just a few months ago at a reunion of some Philly people, online, of course. But he did a beautiful version, an a cappella version of For All We Know, the jazz standard.
Oh.
So he's very versatile, just an amazing singer. Anyway, he happened to be over. He's a friend also. And so we did a quick demo. And what I mean by that is it didn't sound as good as any of the demos on songs by the Netsky Twins, because it was just me banging the song out on piano. Mm-hmm. And Chet, of course, sounded good. He always sounded good. But it was good enough. So I took that to New York with me. And all three of my appointments, the publishing company, the production company, Love Zager, and the record company, Private Stock, all three of them said, I want that song. Now, they were all working together, so that was great. So it's funny because Sissy Houston recorded that song. We were thrilled. It was really our first major recording. Over the years, it's only gotten better to have had that happen, because over the years, we've realized just how amazing a singer Sissy Houston is.
She is one of the world's great soul singers.
Yeah.
She was in the group The Sweet Inspirations.
They
backed up Elvis. They backed up Aretha Franklin. But on her own, she was the first one to record Midnight Train to Georgia. She's just a phenomenal, phenomenal singer. And to have somebody like that sing one of our songs is just such a thrill. It's amazing.
And at the time, we didn't realize how Whitney Houston would become, but of course she became a tremendous star. And
how old was she when she recorded the background vocal for that song?
She was 16, and we went up to New York and saw Sissy Houston a few times, and each time around that time, she'd bring Whitney out during a performance, and Whitney would do like a vocal duet with her. She could do everything, and they were both just phenomenal. So to have Sissy Houston as the main singer and Whitney Houston singing really beautiful harmonies in that song has just gotten more special over the years. And then the other element to it is it really is kind of a Philly soul song that we wrote at first thinking about the Spinners. We thought, wouldn't it be great to have Felipe Wynn sing this? Just to have that tiny little piece of Philly soul in our history is kind of a thrill, you know?
Sure.
So we would encourage people to listen to Sissy Houston's version of Love Don't Hurt People. It's easy to find on YouTube.
I love the message. We all still need it in 2020.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. And the song actually was covered some years later in the early 80s. It was covered by a great singer, Sharon Brown. It was a very different version, a Euro disco version. Mm. And I think Sissy Houston's version is still our favorite, but we're always honored when somebody sings one of our songs. And Sharon Brown was also a great singer, so happy that she sang it too.
Wow. So, Ron, you teach songwriting, and Steve, you also teach music business.
I have taught music business. I taught for 3 years at UMass Lowell, and it was great. And as young people are going into the business, it's good to know at least the basics about publishing, about record companies. So they do a good job up at UMass Lowell. They have a great music department. And I found that most of my music business students were also songwriters. So I pretty much built the course around songs because songs are in every part of the music business. So I'm coaching the songwriting ensemble at New England Conservatory, which is a fantastic music school in a very musical part of Boston. There's literally music in the air because Berklee College of Music is right up the street on Mass Ave. It's just kind of like a musician's neighborhood. The Boston Conservatory, which is now part of Berklee, is on the Fenway or Riverway, whatever, right around the corner. So literally, if windows are open, you're hearing people practicing Chopin, and you're hearing brass ensembles, and you're hearing cellos, and it's just amazing. It's a really vibrant neighborhood. So I was able to do it in person last fall, and this fall it'll be online, which I think can still be good. It'll be like this, and I think you can convey a song online and have a good conversation online, so I think it will work well.
Yeah, so we have two teachers right here, so I have a list of subjects, something like how to write songs that connect to your audience, how to structure songs, even how A&R fits into songwriting and publishing that you just mentioned, of those elements.
I'll give you a few real quick, and then Ron will. In terms of connecting with your audience, I think that's one of the most important things to do when you're getting started, because your audience will give you feedback, not just with applause and not just with comments they might make about your songs, but you can really feel it while you're playing a song and there are people in the room. You can feel whether it's working. And that helped me a lot when I was starting out, being a singer-songwriter and being in various group. So I would suggest to young songwriters, one way or another, and it's hard during a pandemic, but one way or another, get out there and play your songs for people, or convince a friend who maybe can sing better or play better to do your songs with you. So that would cover that. Let's see.
How to structure a song.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I would say this. I love the sort of classic structure that that goes back to Tin Pan Alley and the Brill Building, and the Beatles did it a lot, where you do verse, chorus, and then maybe a bridge into the chorus. And I've done that with some songs. But really, anything can work. I mean, you could have a song that's just verse, chorus. You could have a song that's just like Leonard Cohen would write a long verse and then do another long verse and another
one. That's right.
Sometimes, and whatever works, because there's really, and I'll give you a great example. There's a standard that has been popular since it was written called Moonlight in Vermont, and it has no rhymes in it, and it's made up of something like five or six haiku, certain number of syllables, and yet it has these beautiful images of moonlight in Vermont, snow light in Vermont, but no rhymes. I mean, it's the most unusual standard, especially because standards were where the most structure was, you know, with songs that Cole Porter would write or the Gershwins, they had tremendous structure. Although even Cole Porter, a song like Begin the Beguine, it goes all over the place, and it just goes on, and every bit of it is great. So even the people who wrote standards could break the mold when they wanted to.
That's an interesting part of songwriting, and some songwriters just teach you should be this way, A, B, C, but really, actually, anything goes.
Anything goes, and really, it's the craft and the passion, you know, that has to come through to make a song work. So I don't really like thinking in terms of formulas in any way, but I'm sure it's worked for somebody.
Yes.
So Ron, you were going to comment on some of these things.
Well, I think musical hooks are very important. You know, it might be some little melody that doesn't even have words to it, but it keeps popping up in the background between the words. Or another song I really love is Dire Straits' Sultans of Swing, because it's sort of illustrated by the guitar.
Mark Knopfler, can tell the story with your guitar. And it's not, of course, it's not any kind of swing tune, but it works anyway because it tells a compelling story, and it tells it beautifully.
Yeah. Okay, you guys are the epitome of collaboration, but how important is it to collaborate with others?
You know, I've always really loved it. And in fact, Steve, whatever his name is is such a good sort of songwriter. And his songs are so personal that he could do fine on his own. I wasn't as good. I don't play guitar half, one-tenth as well. So I always wanted to collaborate. But I always enjoyed collaborating with everyone. I just feel like when two people come together and sort of bring their strengths together and also bring such differences together, it can sometimes lead the other person in a direction they would never go, but it might be in a very exciting direction.
Yeah, I think one of the great experiences of collaboration is just the friendship aspect of it that develops, because you're talking about these personal things as you collaborate. And we collaborated on about 10 songs with Michael Bacon. The three of us would sit in a room. We'd usually go out to a studio he had near Philly. And we would just sit there and throw ideas around and throw musical ideas around. And it was so much fun. You know, while you're collaborating, even if you think of a really bad line, you'll say it. And then everybody will, you know, it'll just be hilarious. And then you'll get back to work and come up with things that are good lines. And
Actually,
we've got a few of those songs on Songs by the Netsky Twins. We'll probably put more up as we go along.
There's a song called Just Like a Dreamer that's really probably the best collaborative effort between the three of us. But we loved going out there and doing that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing. There's music as a craft and then music business. So when you guys, collaborate more than two people, works great, enjoyed it, but how do you talk about what percentage is each on before you started working together or after you started working together? How does that work?
Almost all those songs were pretty much a third, a third, a third. But if anything happened to them, we would have to think about it, because I remember one that Michael wrote most of. You want to just be fair. And actually, if you are a songwriter and you're working with somebody, you really do want to figure that out right away. You don't want it to become a problem down the line. So it is important to keep an eye on the business side. The business side doesn't become a problem unless you're successful, usually. And then it can become a big problem because we've never been that successful, so it just hasn't been a problem. Sort of the standard music business problem that you read about is some group is mad at their record company and they don't think they're paying them and all that. And it may be because they got a big advance and they forgot about it, or sometimes groups don't know their business and they don't know like a key thing like this. If you sign a record deal, and I realize there are many ways to do things these days that don't involve record deals, but if in the past you signed a record deal and then your record began to sell and you're wondering why your royalties are still so low, well, one thing you should be aware of is that the record company takes the money that you owe them, the money that they gave to you in advance, out of your little percentage, out of your royalty. They don't take it out of their general profits. So if you, if your share is 15% or 20%, it's that 20% that they're harvesting to pay back the, you know, the loan that you will never have to pay back to them. So I'm just sort of playing devil's advocate for a minute, because a lot of artists don't necessarily look at the details, and they really should, and they should understand what they're getting into. So yeah, the business is important.
Yeah. So how do you take it to A&R? How does this work, A&R, with that, those songs?
Now it used to be, like we said, we used to go to New York and we'd actually have meetings with the people and they'd listen and they might criticize or they might say, yeah, you know, that's a good one. We also spent a lot on postage back in those days. But these days, I really think, my son with his band Maybird is an example. They rise through social media. They put their work out there and they try to get a response through all kinds of social media. They know the landscape much better than I do, people who are, say, in their teens, 20s, and 30s. So it's kind of a different world than the world that we were in.
That's why we decided to put our songs up, and anything new that we make a demo of, we'll put it up there, because we are still active, but most of those demos were made in, you know, the early 2000s, I made some in the 90s, and a lot of them were made in the late 70s and early 80s, but they never were, I mean, some of these songs we only played for the people in offices in New York, and so now they're on the internet, and that's why we're hoping people will hear them and more people will record them, because in my mind, if I like a song, I'm always going to like that song. I don't care if Irving Berlin wrote it in 1928 or Adele wrote it last year. You know, to me, it's a good song. A good song is always a good song.
But, you know, it's interesting. You can have the weird experience of, I wrote the song Hard to Fall in Love maybe 30 years ago. People like Stephen told me, hey, that's a great song. Michael Bacon sang it. Chet sang it. The weird thing was, not until 2 years ago, when Stephen and I were at a reunion and Stephen played the song in front of about 30 or 40 people. And there was real reaction to the song. And I thought, wow, that's what I never had seen, a reaction to the song, because it never got recorded and it never, like, on a shelf somewhere.
So I would stress everybody to really check out one more time their YouTube channel called Songs by the Netsky Twins. You guys made a YouTube channel, but are not on any social media and don't have the website yet. That's why I said, please contact me through my website.
Right.
If any artists find any good songs from their YouTube channels, are you going to make a website or...
Well, I don't know. We kind of like being a well-kept secret. We're
very Googleable, though.
We figure we should spend time out in the world rather than online. So we're not even on Facebook.
Okay, great. So this is going to be the last question I'd like to ask each of you.
Okay, and by the way, thank you very much for having us on. We really appreciate it. And we wish you lots of luck with your music, because you've put up some great stuff.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for being on my show.
This was really fun.
Yeah. It was an honor. It was fun.
Yeah.
And we got a lot, but the last question I'd like to ask you guys is, what advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Okay, I'll start that, and I'll say, Don't be overconfident. I think I was a little bit overconfident and kind of messed up some opportunities. But have enough confidence. I mean, I listened to some people. You may run into some people who say, you can't do that, or give that up, never be good at that, whatever. Have enough confidence to give it a good try. So that's the main advice I would give. And on the technical side, I would say this: branch out. If you're comfortable with certain chords, learn some new chords. If you're comfortable with certain kinds of melodies, branch out a little bit. Not necessarily a lot, but branch out so that your songs are a little more distinctive. And
Okay.
I would say don't overthink it. I think some of the best songs come from really raw feelings and emotions. So you shouldn't be too analytical in your songwriting. And I would also say don't copy things, but be aware of what's going on in the world. Those Gershwin songs that I talked about being so great, that's just not happening right now. So it's more probably these days of people putting together things in the studio, but be aware of what's in the culture, the cultural moment you're in.
Right. The music is so different now. These beautiful classic songs, we kind of take it for granted sometimes.
Yeah, and but they'll always be great. I hope that songwriters today who are creating their work in the studio, I hope they would recognize how great George Gershwin or Irving Berlin or
And I think there are a lot of writers in certain genres who are doing pretty much what we did and what we do, which is working on the craft, working for a few days sometimes, just trying to get each line right, making each lyric line count and each melody count. And I think there are singer-songwriters out there, there are Broadway writers, there are people writing for country music, and now and then you hear some pop hits that seem to be crafted the old-fashioned way. I heard a song by The Weeknd just recently called, I forgot the title, but it's pretty amazing. And a very well-written song.
you're catching up to the new songs. That's great. I had so much great time talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
Well,
Thank
thanks for
you.
having us.
And until we meet again, sayonara.
Okay, bye.
Bye.